You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later, we'll find out what to expect from this year's CPAC, or the Political Conservative Action Conference.
First, it seems like we've all had one of those moments. Something that happens that's so unlikely, so weird, we can't believe we've just experienced it. Maybe rolling five Yahtzees in a row, or bumping into a hometown friend we haven't seen in years halfway across the planet. When this stuff happens, we see these events as being a once-in-a-lifetime event.
But our next guest says these unlikely events happen all the time and must happen all the time. And in a new book, he explains how the laws of probability can actually explain why the highly improbable is actually commonplace. And by understanding how these laws work, we might be able to use probability to our advantage.
Joining us now is David Hand. He's an emeritus professor of mathematics and senior research investigator at Imperial College London. His new book is The Improbability Principle: Why Coincidences, Miracles, and Rare Events Happen Every Day. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much for having me on the program.
So when we encounter one of these weird coincidences in our life, we're tempted to chalk it up to fate or maybe divine intervention. Should we slow down on looking for that kind of a supernatural meaning?
I think that's a very nice way of putting it, and I think that's exactly right. Rather than first saying, there is no explanation for this, somebody must be controlling my life, we should do the calculations, as it were, maybe not actually do the maths, but think about the possibilities. And I think, as is explained in the book, we'll find that these sorts of events are, in fact, commonplace. We should, in fact, expect these, what appear to be extremely improbable events, to happen.
You call your book and your explanation the improbability principle. You weave together a bunch of different facets of that. But in general, what do you mean by the improbability principle?
In a sentence, I describe it as extremely improbable events are commonplace, which sounds like a contradiction, of course, because surely if something is extremely improbable, you don't expect to see it very often. So how can it be common? That's the essence of the improbability principle. And the five laws, which, as you say, weave together to make that the principle, are different ways that different sort of things which come together to influence that sort of occurrence of the improbable occurring.
One of the things that struck me, one of the facets you talk about, is the law of truly large numbers. And it made me think, okay, if I right now started flipping a quarter 100 times and everyone came up heads, I'd be pretty awestruck. That would be amazing. But how does the law of large numbers change the lens that I should look at that through?
That's a very nice example. A perfect example. Yes, if you flip a coin and it comes up 100 times in a row, heads 100 times in a row, you would be amazed. But suppose I tell you, well, in fact, I flipped a coin 5 million times, and at flip number 1,002,337, that's when my sequence of 100 heads started. You wouldn't be at all surprised that in my 5 million hits, my 5 million flips, somewhere there had occurred a sequence of 100 heads. If you take enough opportunities, which is what the truly large numbers refer to, if you take enough opportunities, you expect such strange occurrences to occur.
And without delving too deeply into the math there, the probability of me doing that in my first 100 flips, I imagine, is much lower than it happening at some point in that first 10 million flips.
That's exactly right. You can actually work out the probability that it will happen in the first 100 flips, but I won't. Yeah, but if you keep going for long enough, you stack up those truly large numbers, you should expect it to occur. Now, the point about the law really is that often those truly large numbers are hidden from us. When we discover that something very unusual has happened to someone, we don't think, well, come on, there are 7 billion people on the world. We'd expect this sort of thing to happen.
And that a little detour, I think you call it the gambler's fallacy or something, a kind of magical thinking where... Yes. If I flip that coin 99 times and it's been heads, next time for sure it's got to be tails, because probability, what are the odds it'll be 100 times in a row? What's wrong with that way of looking at it?
Yeah, and that's a very nice example. We all know that if you flip a coin, then around half the time it will come up heads and half the time it will come up tails. So surely if it's come up lots of heads in a row, the chance must be more that it will come up tails next time. But let me give you a nice little illustration of why that's wrong. Suppose you did that. You flipped the coin lots and lots of times, like the 100 flips we were talking about before. And you keep doing that until it comes up, say, 20 times or 99 times heads in a row. You just keep going, however many million flips it takes, until you get a sequence of 99 heads. Then you put it in your pocket, and you go and find a friend, and you say, tell you what, I'll flip this coin, and I'll bet you it'll come up tails. If you could do that, if the coin really was more likely to come up tails, you're sort of priming by waiting in a row. You would be more likely to, you could win any amount of money by doing it in that way, by preparing your coin. And that's clearly ludicrous. You can't do that. The coin doesn't actually remember the flips, you know, the way the flips have come up before. That's the point about the gambler's fallacy. It doesn't remember it. I think the thing to remember is that in any 100 flips of the coin, there is only one way that all coins can come up heads. There's one way that all coins can come up, all 100 flips can come up tails. There are lots and lots of ways that they can come up roughly a half heads and half tails. So it's overwhelmingly more likely that you'll get roughly a half heads and roughly half tails. Very occasionally, however, you'll get one of these more extreme events.
If I can segue over from math to a hint of biology here, is there something about us as humans that we want to see that connection? We want to think the coin remembers and is acting in a certain way?
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, the improbability principles tied up with human behavior and the way we perceive things. I mean, when we do observe, your sort of opening type of example illustrates this. When you're thinking of somebody and then the phone rings and it's them, you think, gosh, wow, what an amazing coincidence. But you don't notice all the times that you're thinking of someone and the phone rings and it's not them. Because why should you notice them, but those events? So the ones which have some sort of meaning for us, which we would regard as coincidences, are enhanced in our minds. They seem more striking than they really should.
Is that leading us into another one of the laws you talk about, the law of selection?
The law of selection is a rather more subtle law, yeah, than the law of truly large numbers. This is a particularly interesting one, though, which basically says you can make things as likely as you want if you choose after the event. Here's a very simple example of this, which I think will probably be familiar to you. You're walking along a country lane, and you come across a barn, and in the side of the barn, there are a lot of painted targets. And in the center of each target, there's an arrow. And you think, gosh, this guy's a really hot archer. Then you carry on walking. You turn around and look at the other side of the barn. And what you see there is a number of arrows sticking in the side of the barn and a man with a paint pot painting arrows around the targets. He's chosen after the event, and he's made sure that the probability of getting those arrows in the centers of the target is one.
And is that
selected after the event? You know.
And that's the same thing where we remember the dream that came true, but not the 99 that didn't. Yeah. Or the astrologer makes 100 predictions and really makes a big deal about the two they got right.
That's right. Like Gene Dixon, a famous American psychic who predicted 4 years before he was elected that a Democrat, before Kennedy was elected, that a Democrat would be elected who would then die or would be assassinated or die in office. A very good prediction, mm-hmm. But then you also learn that she predicted that the first man to walk on the moon would be from the Soviet Union and that the Third World War would break out in 1958. Basically, what she did was drew attention to the predictions she's got right and ignore all the ones she got wrong. And, of course, people would subconsciously collude in this. I mean, why would they pay attention to things she didn't get right? But things she did get right, you'd look at them and think, wow. Is there something in this?
Well, that draws it to attention to the difficulty of predicting the future, but maybe also the dangers of predicting the past. I mean, I could go back and 100% accurately explain why 9/11 was going to happen, why World War II was going to start, the recession of 2008. The hindsight can throw us off, can't it?
You are absolutely right. This is a very, very important point. It's very easy to predict the past and say, yes, that led to that, which led to that, which led to that, which led to this. But doing it in the future, there are so many things that could happen, so many ways it could go. 9/11 is a really nice example because there are sort of people who say, well, you know, it was obvious. If you look back, you can see that, it was obvious that this was going to happen. Yes, looking back, but there is just no way you could have done it looking forward. Alan Greenspan was asked a similar thing about the financial crash. Didn't you see it coming? Why didn't anybody warn us? And he said, yes, of course, we saw it coming. We saw all sorts of things coming. We just didn't know which was the right one. We didn't know which way it was going to pan out.
We're talking with David Hand about why seemingly improbable, almost impossible events actually happen every day, all the time. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have that improbable event in your life? How did you explain it at the time? Did it shake you up a little? Or if you have a question about the probability that we're talking about, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking with David Hand about his new book, The Improbability Principle, about why amazing coincidences happen all the time.
You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Has an improbable event happened in your life? How do you explain it? 1-800-642-1234. You can also email talk@wpr.org.
David, before we go to our callers, I want to talk a little bit about some practical applications or ways this makes determining things in the scientific world difficult. Disease clusters you talk about a little bit in your book. How does our analysis of probability make it hard to figure out if there's just random chance that there's an outbreak or there's a cause to that outbreak?
Yeah, that's a very nice example, because if you just randomly distribute, if you just drop a lot of ball bearings or grains of sand on a piece of paper, randomly distribute them, some of them will just form clusters by chance. And that's the point about disease clusters. You would expect to get some of these sorts of clusters by chance. So it's a rather subtle area of statistics determining whether the sorts of clusters one does see for diseases are just due to chance or, in fact, have some underlying common cause, like pollution, local source of pollution or something, or a disease outbreak, for instance. It's quite an advanced area of statistics, and it's a tough problem because you would get these rare events, these rare clusters by chance.
And you don't want to ignore the real cause, if there is one, but you don't want to get distracted by random distribution.
That's right. You don't want to cause panic by telling people that there's a disease outbreak when there isn't. Yeah.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Bill with us in Columbus. Bill, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I would like to ask how the word coincidence fits in with your thesis. Here's my story. I was stationed with the Marines in Japan in 1975. We had a squadron picture taken. A guy in that picture gets out of the Marines, joins the Army later on, gets sent to Germany, and is sitting in an enlisted club. And my brother sits down and they two at the same table and they start talking. And this guy, Marty, pulls out a photograph, shows it to my brother, and I am in the photograph.
Yeah.
And almost everybody I talk to has at least one strange story like that.
David, we do all have that story.
Sorry?
We do. A lot of people have that story. How unusual is that?
That's right. Funnily enough, I have a friend who is a catastrophist. I think he's the only catastrophist I've ever come across. He's an expert on catastrophes. He has a similar sort of story about going to visit Singapore, which his family had no connection with. His parents had never been there. And visiting an exhibition in Singapore and seeing a photograph of his father on the wall in this exhibition in Singapore. I think that's right. I think everybody has coincidence sort of stories. But the point really is, and I think this is, there are the various laws of the improbability principle can come into play. But again, one of them which would come into play with these sorts of things is the law of truly large numbers. You travel around all your life, you go to various places, you see all sorts of different things. The chances of coming across some event like this, there are so many possibilities. And of course, one tends not to notice all the others, the things which, the many millions of things which don't attract your attention, don't make you think that's the same as that or whatever. So the ones which do seem that much more striking.
So all the times we met random people who showed us a picture of people we had no idea who they were, out of all of those, eventually we're going to counter. And also, you mentioned the law of near enough in your book. Is this a near enough case? It wasn't him, it was his brother.
Ah, that's very good. Yes, that's exactly right. That's right. If it had been a photograph of exactly the same person, you would say, my goodness. But then if it was your brother, you say, my goodness. What about if it was your cousin or your parents or a friend from work or whatever? We can expand the scope quite a lot. And any example from this we would regard as a coincidence. But by expanding it in this way, we're increasing the chance of observing this sort of thing.
Thanks a lot for the call and that example, Bill. We'll go now to Pat in River West. Pat, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I was a bike racer, this is about 30 years ago, and I was with two other bike race team members, and we were in a hotel like in Manila, Illinois. It's a little town to race in a bike race there, and we realized all of our moms' names was Helen. And, you know, that's one of those cute...
Yeah, yeah. The law of truly large numbers applies. You know, if you take a group of a handful of three, four, whatever people, and look at their mother's names, well, there are so many sets of four people in the world. You know, if the chance that you would be that there would be such a set with the certain mothers who had the same names is very high. It would be amazing if there was no such set. That doesn't detract from, and this is an important point, mm-hmm. that doesn't detract from the sense, of, just because you do the calculations and say, yeah, well, we'd expect this sort of thing to happen. And of course, when it happens, you remember it. And you, for instance, you've remembered it and you're telling me about it. All the other people to whom it didn't happen don't remember it, and obviously. But it's something you notice, so it grows in importance. And that's, I think this is important. One can do the calculations and say, yeah, you would think it would happen. It's not really that surprising in retrospect when you look at all the possibilities. But that doesn't mean it's not a wonderful and striking thing. The sense of wonder is still there, even if we do the maths.
So you're not a killjoy.
That's right.
Well, how can we apply this in our daily lives? We can't use the improbability principle probably to make winning stock tips or pick the right lottery number, but can we change it to the way we think about those things?
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, the book does tell you, in fact, how to increase the amount you win on the lottery should you win. It also tells you how to increase the chance that you will win the lottery. Also, there is an example in there of how to guarantee you will win the lottery. having said that, you know, these are not strategies that I would necessarily recommend. There is also an illustration in there of how you can perfectly predict stock market moves. Again, that's of rather dubious morality, and I wouldn't recommend anybody take it up. But what the book's really about is fundamentally, it's about how the universe works. It's telling us we should expect these apparently highly improbable events. And there are ways you can use it to think about things. It can change your sort of approach to the way you think about things so that you get more insight into what's happening.
Well, there are places where maybe we could be more skeptical. We hear about hot hands in sports stars, or a hot hand in gambling maybe, or somebody who's a really solid stock picker. Should we maybe not be so quick to jump on that kind of bandwagon and maybe think about whether it's just the improbability principle at work?
Yeah, let's take the stock pickers first. I mean, that's right. You take the suppose we had a 1,000-odd different stock pickers, and we tested them over 10 weeks. Is it going up or down over 10 weeks? So 10 times, is it going up or down? You'd expect about one of them to get it all 10 right, just by chance, even if it was totally random. You'd expect about one of them to get it all wrong, all 10 wrong, just by chance. You'd expect lots of them, just by chance, to get lots right, half right and half wrong, around half right. But if you did that with all of these 1,000, and you found the guy who had got all 10 right, and you ignored all the others, and you looked back just at his scores over the last 10 weeks, you would think, this guy is really hot. And then, of course, if you start to place your money using his recommendations, you'll rapidly discover that he was, in fact, no better than chance. He was just the one who happened to come out first, because somebody must, and by chance, he was the one who got all right.
Before we're done, do you have a personal improbability story that struck you that you're a mathematician too, obviously, but that got you interested in the concept of improbability?
This is something I've been, as a statistician, I've been sort of thinking about these things for a long time. So there are various things which happened to me, collecting sorts of anecdotes and things which happened to me. But one happened just a couple of years ago, in fact. I went to the Royal Statistical Society conference in Telford, a town in the UK. I went up to the reception desk to register. I said, my name's David Hand. The receptionist said, but you've already registered. I said, no, after a moment's doubt, I said, no, I haven't. She said, oh, I see. You're the second David Hand here this week. There are two David Hands with us this week. And then she said, and which one are you? to which I, in a rare moment of quick thinking, said, well, of course, I'm the real one. She unfortunately sighed and said, they all say that. But then I did a calculation, and for instance, in America, this happened in the UK, but had it happened in America, there are about 300 David Hands in America. So you can do the calculation and work out that during the course of my life, it's not really that surprising. I move around a bit, go to conferences, meet lots of people. Not really that surprising that I should encounter another person with the same name.
Well, I'm glad we got the real David Hand on the air with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
That's David Hand, Emeritus Professor of Mathematics and Senior Research Investigator at Imperial College London. We've been talking about his new book, The Improbability Principle.